Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're joined by Carol Sapaniak, President of the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research. Carol brings more than three decades of experience in scientific research, teaching, and pharmaceutical sales, along with a deep commitment to bioethics and the protection of human dignity at every stage of life. Her work focuses on advocating for ethical biomedical research that respects both science and the inherent value of every human being. Carol, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you very much, Toni.
Did I say your last name correctly?
Perfectly.
Okay. Carol, to start with, can you share a bit about your professional background in scientific research and pharmaceutical work, and how that journey led you into bioethics and pro-life advocacy?
Well, in truth, I'm here in bioethics because of my relationship with the Lord. You know, that's what really drove me. But even as a youngin', I loved science. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was going to pursue science in my whole career. I've done at least three completely different varieties of science. It started with chemical research for about a decade. Mm-hmm. And actually, whether this is good or bad, helping to produce the 2-liter bottles, because at the time in the 80s, they only had glass and aluminum cans. And then I went on to teaching, which I just loved. Mm-hmm. I loved teaching high school biology, chemistry, algebra, and junior high as well. And I've done that here in Omaha. I'm originally from Illinois, but we moved here a long time ago. And finally, I ended up in pharmaceuticals because I saw it as a great way to serve my family. Mm-hmm. And of course, I loved the science of it. Mm-hmm. And I was compelled to help people and really help doctors to help their patients. Mm-hmm. So bioethics, right in the middle of all of this, I have always kept attuned to what's happening in culture and in medicine in terms of the ethics or the lack thereof. Mm-hmm. And I'm very passionate about that. And one day, I was just led to look up where could I get a master's degree, and I got it here at Creighton.
Okay.
So, you know, pro-life advocacy actually started when I was like 15, sidewalk counseling, even my husband and I in high school and college, sidewalk counseling back in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we've done it ever since. On the other side of the coin, I am in love with old people. We had a lot of old people in my family, and I loved being with them. And so I would volunteer candy striper in high school all the way to dragging my poor kids into geriatric centers so that they could bless those people and find out what it was like to become old.
Mm. You and I have several things in common. One, we don't. I'm actually from Chicago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I am. I used to be a pharmaceutical rep.
Yes, I knew that. I knew that. How about that?
And I love old people, as you say.
Get out.
Partially because I'm probably one of those old people now.
No, but yeah, I bet you all along you loved them.
But I do not have a master's in bioethics, so I'm excited to talk to you today a little bit. How has all of that shaped the way you think about today's medical and research landscape?
Well, I'll tell you, going back to school and learning how to write a paper again was really rough, but I am so thankful for that education at Creighton in bioethics, or they called it at the time healthcare ethics, because it opened my eyes to so many things, industries, cultures, different ethnicities, and their approach to medicine. It was a real learning curve, and one of the hardest things that I learned, and I'll just be very bold and say it, is that when pharmaceutical companies, which I was in the midst of at the time, mess up, they many times don't share transparently.
Yeah.
They hide it.
Mm-hmm.
They hide it until it finally comes out. And sometimes mm-hmm. as a pharmaceutical rep, we would hear mm-hmm. that somebody's company had hidden, you know, dozens of yeah. clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
So this, and here's what perplexed me more than anything. The company was fined like 1-2% of the monetary gains that they received from that product.
Mm.
1-2%, and no wow. one went to jail.
Wow.
There was no accountability, mm-hmm. no transparency, yeah. no accountability.
Yeah.
And I have to say, it rattled me.
Yeah.
And that's actually prior to that, I went looking for ENSER.
Mm-hmm.
I went looking to get involved, to mm-hmm. try and help and change mm-hmm. things, yeah. at least here in Nebraska.
Yeah.
And so that leads us to ENSER, which was originally established 20-some years ago mm-hmm. by physicians at UNMC. They were the board members, you know, a couple dozen. They were very brave people. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, definitely mountain movers.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to stop until mm-hmm. certain things changed in the research
yeah.
at UNMC.
So you mentioned ENSER, which is the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research. For our listeners who may not be familiar with that, just tell us a little bit about what role it plays with both our state and more broadly across our state.
Yeah, it's funny because for sure it was originated to move citizens in Nebraska, and it still is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we've got 4,000 subscribers to our e-blast that mm-hmm. goes out, which is an amazing quantity. And we do encourage people to, and we provide information so they can write into the regents, so that they can write to their legislators in the unicameral, declaring their expectation for pro-life decision making.
Okay.
And now I have to add, though, the beautiful sort of happy occurrence occurred that our website was built
mm-hmm.
And we have worked on it diligently. We, for the last almost 10 years, have had over 150 countries visiting our website.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, I mean, we've got, you know, I've got the exact... we've got almost 9,000 unique visitors last
wow.
year.
Wow.
And that meant 27 unique visits every day.
Wow.
I have people contacting me from Spain, mm-hmm. Argentina, mm-hmm. from Africa, Europe, asking me questions, asking me for information, mm-hmm. for data, because really that's my sweet spot from pharmaceuticals. So I'm grateful mm-hmm. for pharma.
Right.
Because my sweet spot was... analyzing and being able to break down and communicate
mm-hmm.
clinical trials.
Yeah.
And I never knew that was going to be my,
wow.
my mm-hmm. you know, forte.
Yeah.
But it turned out to be.
Absolutely.
And so that's important. You mm-hmm. can never just read as doctors do because they don't have time
no, they
to
don't.
Read every clinical trial.
Yeah.
But the abstract,
mm-hmm.
no.
Mm-hmm.
The actual body, the results, the discussion that is in every clinical trial can be left behind
mm-hmm.
in an abstract. Words can be changed, outcomes, results. Believe it or not, they do it.
Yeah, yeah. So are there other coalitions in other states? Or I mean, it's amazing that we have that many, that you guys have that many subscribers. So
right.
are there other coalitions in states or the lack of the reason why you all have so much interest.
The lack of, I think.
Okay.
But I noticed that you had a gal from Charlotte Logier
mm-hmm. yeah.
A couple weeks ago
yeah.
or this past week maybe. And David Prentice has been very kind to us and to me. I've learned from him. I've sat under his teaching,
yeah.
but I respect him very much. And when I went to Hong Kong, which like little old me went by myself to Hong Kong, to the second, or maybe it was the third, no, it was the second gene editing symposium, international symposium. And I asked David if he would like me to report to them, really unknowing what was going to happen. But what happened was literally earth shaking across the medical world, because a man stood up there who was actually a physicist, and he explained his research wherein, for the very first time that we know, he changed two, potentially three embryos' DNA, completely changed it.
Wow.
And brought them to birth, to full term and birth. And really, in the medical world, regular people wouldn't know this.
No.
But it was shockwaves.
Wow.
Because it had been agreed upon. Now, no regulation, of course. They don't want regulation.
Right,
but it had
right.
been agreed upon that this was a red line that would not be crossed.
Yeah, yeah.
So David Prentice was very kind to me in allowing me to share that information with him. Mm-hmm. And so there are entities, but they're much bigger than ENSER.
Yeah.
And I respect them very much.
Good. I'm grateful for the work that you all are doing here in Nebraska. So what are the core principles that guide ENSER's work when it comes to evaluating biomedical research?
So the bottom line is, any kind of biomedical research that undermines human dignity, and by that I mean it discriminates against certain human beings based upon their developmental stage, their abilities, their genetics, or if this research conducts itself to treat humans as just objects. Mm-hmm. Even if they think the outcome is a positive one for humanity, this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And that's what we stand on. So to treat a human being as either being too old, too young, too feeble, or a mere body is to treat them with inequality, with discrimination. And in a dehumanizing manner. So that is really our foundation.
Good, good, good.
Yeah.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby.
You're listening to Life Matters, where we have conversations that equip you to engage thoughtfully on issues of life in today's culture. Today's guest is Carol Sapaniak with the Nebraska Coalition for Ethical Research. We're discussing the ethics of biomedical research and what recent national changes mean for the future of science and human dignity. Stay with us as we continue this important conversation. So you talk about beneficence, justice, and autonomy as a foundational ethical principle. Can you break those down in a way that helps our listeners understand how they apply to real-world research?
Thank you for asking me that, because I don't leave anywhere, if I'm speaking, without explaining that.
Okay, good.
Because it is where medical ethics comes from. So we all know what happened in World War II. Mm-hmm. Horrible, horrific experiments on human beings. Mm-hmm. And Nuremberg trial went on.
Yeah.
Out of that, there were 10 Nuremberg principles. Mm. So now let's fast forward to the 1970s, late 70s. And we've got some physicians on the East Coast who have decided to come together and have a conference to develop something that is more easily understandable, communicable, that's not a word, able to be communicated. Mm-hmm. And those, they called it the Belmont Principles. Those physicians, men and women, were amazing people. And this was about 1979. 76 to 79 that they were working on this. So they came up with three. Now, we all know the first one, the Hippocratic Oath. Yep. So we know do no harm. Now, that's a very natural inclination in society and humans, we hope. Mm-hmm. Do good, don't do bad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that is what physicians adhere to or sign on to, right?
They should.
And so beyond that, we have to get a little bit more particular. When we talk about things like beneficence, what we're saying is the benefit must outweigh any risk. Hmm. It's simple. The benefit of whatever's about to happen to this patient must outweigh the risk.
Wow.
So number two, we talk about justice. Mm-hmm. And of course, they chose these things because these things were not being adhered to.
Yeah.
And unfortunately today, we still have instances
right.
where they're not being adhered to. So justice means we can't use the most vulnerable. Back when this started, we were talking about prisoners. Prisoners were used for scientific medical experiments for decades and decades.
Yeah.
Because why not? We'll just abuse them.
Hmm. They're prisoners.
Correct.
They don't matter.
They're not human.
Yeah.
You know.
No.
So there's no justice there. But now, as of 1970, mm-hmm. we're talking about infants, mm-hmm. embryos,
yes.
fetus. Mm-hmm. From the moment of conception until the moment of natural death, mm-hmm. the elderly.
Yeah.
So justice has to do with protecting the most vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, autonomy refers to informed consent.
Hmm.
Now, informed consent is a little complex. And even our government, the HHS, defines it very clearly. And it's very detailed. Not only does a person have to have the capability of understanding what's going to happen, but they have to understand all of what's going to happen. That means they must be informed of every possible risk, everything that's going on in every part of whatever the procedure is or the research. And they must give their yes.
Mm.
Without it, it is not autonomy.
Yeah.
It is not informed consent. Mm. So these are three very specific things, well beyond do no harm, that really encapsulate do no harm.
Yeah.
And they protect the individual patient.
So as you were talking about that, I can't help but think about how the abortion pill plays in this. And I don't know if we'll get to some questions about it, but, you know, benefit must outweigh the risk. The abortion pill is benefiting the pockets of those abortion supporters.
Yeah.
The most vulnerable.
Yes.
The unborn baby.
Yes.
And then secondly, that young woman.
Crisis.
Yes, absolutely. And then the third thing, informed consent. Most of the girls that are having or taking these abortion pills have no idea what they're getting into because they're just being told, well, just take the pill, go home, you'll be fine. And so all three of these are, when we look at the abortion pill, are really being
violated.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. I've just read somebody's account, one girl's account, who they told her it would feel like menstruation. And by the end of the night, she was in the hospital, you know, just a little bleeding. No.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're rolling the dice.
Yeah.
You do not know how your body is going to be affected by these drugs because they're so strong.
Yes.
And
there's really no governance.
I'm sorry?
I said there's really no governance.
No. Especially now, mail order, all of that across, you know, state lines and
other things.
Yeah, I agree. It's a sad story.
It absolutely is.
It has to stop.
Like I said, I couldn't help but think about the girls that we serve and just that the abortion pill is our enemy.
Yes.
You know, it really is.
And it's theirs too. They just don't know it.
They don't know it. Informed consent.
Ugh, that's right.
Man. One of the key ideas your organization emphasizes is that human dignity is not dependent on age, stage, or ability. Why is that principle so critical in conversations about medical research?
Well, kind of like we said, you know, every human being has this inherent dignity. It's by being human.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we can go back to, and I do go back to freely, we're created in God's image. Mm-hmm. I'm not a proponent of animal abuse or planet abuse or so I'm saying the creator has actually everything in creation reflects the character of God in one way or another because it all came from him. So the point being, you know, this is very important, especially for people who are the most vulnerable. And we kind of discussed justice. I'm trying to think if there's anything more to say on that. I mean, it should be clear. Right. It should be clear.
Yeah, I agree. I think when we start to look at age as not being important or stage or ability, that's how we begin to or start to dehumanize people. And it makes it easier to abuse, to neglect, to take advantage of, because we've dehumanized them because of age or stage of life or ability.
Yeah.
I've had guests on Life Matters where we talk about one young lady I think about in particular was not expected to live, you know, beyond a few days. And she's into her 30s now. And one of the things I remember saying is that just because she's disabled doesn't mean she didn't have a quality of life. You know, she has enjoyed life, but because I'm a normal, quote unquote, human, you know, I look at her life and say, there's no way you could have a good life. Well, that's not true.
That's right.
You know, just because she's disabled does not mean she has, and she's lived a full life.
Yeah.
Beautiful. You know, which is what we should encourage everyone to do.
Yeah.
Live a full life at the capacity that you can,
that's
you know,
right.
But so I think when we look at age, stage and ability, it really helps us or really challenges us to dehumanize people.
Yes.
And that's not a good thing.
That's what leads us to eugenics.
Yes.
You know, people who think they're superior.
Yes.
Picking and choosing winners and losers.
Yeah.
And we were mind melding there because I was going right there when you even asked, you know, started your comment. This is not civilization. That's not civilized.
It's not.
Let alone respectful.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we probably should do a show on eugenics one of these days. I think there's a lot about eugenics that people don't realize, which really is the birthplace of Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger. So one of these days, I think we may have to do a session on that because I think the people are missing a lot.
They need to know.
Absolutely. Need to know. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. All right. Let's turn our issue. Let's turn our attention to the issue of aborted fetal tissue research. For those who may not fully understand it, what is fetal tissue research and how has it been used historically?
Hopefully, people are more aware in the last 10 years because of people like David
Delidian.
I forget how to say his name.
Yeah.
Brave man who's just been vindicated. You know, what's happening is like we're back with the Nazis, what has been happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. It's not a myth, not a conspiracy. Fetuses are birthed in a manner to keep them whole so that their tissue and organs can be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Harvested.
Thank you. That was it. Harvested to be used in medical research. There is so much proof of it. Yeah. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say people who deny it are not living in reality.
Yeah.
Their minds have been seared so that they don't see it. So this has been going on. I mean, really, since at least the 1950s, even before fetuses were being legally aborted in medicine. And I remember the first time as a high schooler looking at photographs. Just horrific.
Yeah.
And primarily, historically, fetal tissue has been used for vaccine development. And of course, your listeners probably know that there is a very closely related link between all vaccines and their development and fetal tissues. It's also being used for immune system research, like diseases like HIV and AIDS. Alternatives are available, but they are not preferred.
Okay.
They are not preferred. Now, a lot of people would say, well, why not?
I was about to ask you.
Well, I could start with saying there is evil in the world that we cannot conceive of. And so we don't believe it's true because it's not within us. We cannot comprehend or put our heads around it. So let's just start with that. And then let's go to easy procurement, low cost, high return, accessibility, quick results. So all of those are reasons why aborted fetal tissue has been used. Sometimes taken, harvested when the baby is still alive. So let's just put that out there. You know, it has to stop.
Absolutely.
It is another thing that must stop in a civilized society that calls itself ethical, that the medical industry calls itself ethical. How can they be doing this? They have become numb.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Carol Sapiniak. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. You can also find information on our website about how you can partner with us in the life-saving work of Assure. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on BOT Radio Network.